Hoover, the Hoover Middle School Podcast. Our podcast crew includes
Mum,
Adeline,
Ireland,
Avery,
Ellie,
Kaylin,
Henry.
Thank you for joining us on our 11th episode of Season 2. This podcast is a special episode. Not only have we recorded this podcast for listeners, but this has been a video recorded for the student engagement through Authentic Learning Summit Experiences for Future Ready. Your Hoover Podcast was invited by Central Rivers Area Education Agency to share their talent with educators around the state of Iowa. The theme for this episode is Iowa Spring Weather. In this episode, podcasters registered major storms in the history of Iowa, interviewed by a renowned meteorologist, storm chaser, and a few Hoover educators who experienced a few storms themselves.
The Parker Spring A5 tornado took place on May 25, 2008. The first cell warning for the tornado occurred at 4:22 p.m. Central Daylight Time for the Parkersburg area. Momentarily, a large tornado formed, going across a couple of miles of Applington at 4:48 p.m. The tornado then traveled east of Applington to some farmland, then towards Parkersburg. After reaching Parkersburg, it intensified to an EF5 tornado a little bit before 5 p.m. Homes, banks, and a high school were then destroyed and damaged in Parkersburg. Some houses were swept away and just left with basements. Plant roots were ripped from the ground, leaving the land bare. The tornado then exited on the east side of the town while going through and destroying a golf course, a newly built subdivision, and large expertly built houses with anchor bolts. The tornado was estimated to be about 7/10 of a mile wide when it hit Parkersburg. It continued to New Hartford, a neighboring town of Parkersburg, about 9 minutes later, maintaining its EF5 strength. More homes with anchor bolts were destroyed and ripped away from the land. The tornado then pursued throughout the town until reaching north of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area, dying down to about 1/4 of a mile in width, then resuming to strike country areas. The damage after that was minimal as they went through a few farms at EF2 strength. The tornado then reached Dunkerton, transitioning to a 1 2/10 mile width. After going through some farms and destroying some buildings, the tornado got to Fairbank and it vanished. The highest winds in the tornado were 205 miles per hour. In total, there were 9 deaths, 7 in Parkersburg and 2 in New Hartford. The damage cost $75 million in 2008 U.S. dollars.
The Enhancement Fujita Scale, better known as the EF Scale, is a scale that measures the intensity of a tornado. An EF0 does light damage with 65 to 85 mile per hour winds. An EF1 does moderate damage with 86 to 110 miles per hour wind. An EF2 does considerable damage with 111 to 135 miles per hour wind. An EF3 does severe damage with 135 to 165 mile per hour winds. An EF4 does devastating damage with 166 to 200 miles per hour wind. An EF5 does incredible damage with 201 plus winds. Some warning signs of a tornado are wall clouds, especially if they start rotating. Also, if the temperature drops, that is a common sign of a tornado. Be cautious if you hear quietness during a thunderstorm or if you hear a freight train-like noise. If you see a cloud of debris with or without a funnel, a tornado is headed your way.
Hi, I'm Kaylin, and you are?
Mark Schnackenberg.
So what's your job?
My job is chief meteorologist at KWWL in Waterloo, Iowa. And my job is to basically keep you safe when there's severe weather, or at least to inform you about severe weather. And then in between that, it is the daily forecast to let you know that it's either going to rain or snow or be windy, or you need to wear your coats, or it's time for shorts, or maybe both that day. Some days it starts out cold and it's warm in the afternoon. So that's what I do on a regular basis each and every day.
What should we expect for spring weather in Iowa?
Well, that's a good question. Long-term forecasts are very difficult. And one example would be this past winter. I mean, going into January, well, in December, we didn't have a whole lot of winter weather. Then in January, we had our 2.5 weeks, technically, of winter, where we had back-to-back blizzards within a couple of days, and then bitterly cold air, and that was it. And then we warmed up, and we became spring, and that snow was gone in just a matter of weeks, and it's been in the 60s and the 70s in February. So long-range forecasts are very difficult to predict. Short-term forecasts are hard. So if you can't get the short ones, the long ones are even harder, and they're more general. They're not really specific, and a lot of times don't help too many people, at least the general public, for the most part. It's more things to talk about.
What should we look out for in storms?
Every once in a while, check in on the forecasts just to make sure there is no active weather. If you're going to be any traveling or just be about around the area, especially during severe weather, which nowadays severe weather could be any time of the year. We've had severe weather in December and January and February recently, but our severe weather typically is our severe weather season is typically May and June. That's when it's real active around here. So sort of stay up to date on the forecast and know if there's a particular day that you're concerned about. Pay attention to that one and come back in or check back in some source to get the latest information, because information changes hourly almost, usually every 6 to 12 hours long range. And so there are some days I'll walk in and there's this big storm 7 days from now. And then the next day I walk in and there's no storm. Yeah. Like, what happened to that storm that was in the model guidance from yesterday?
And then the worms are gone. Like, where
did they go? Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just stay up to date on things if you think that storms may be coming, because that does have an impact on whatever you do, basically, when it comes to severe weather. And a lot of times it's more for short-term than long-term issue.
What do you think is the best or worst part of spring here in
Arkansas? The best part is probably everybody gets out of their houses and apartments, and they're now enjoying the fresh air, warmer temperatures. The worst part may be that it's a transition season going from winter to summer, and that's usually one that can cause some severe weather. And unfortunately, severe weather can be very disruptive or life-changing for some people because of the damage that it may do, or injuries or fatalities. So that would be the real downside to spring. But hopefully that doesn't happen very often. But if that is a possibility.
Mm. Is being a meteorologist what you always wanted to do in life?
Yes. Since I was a little kid, wanted to do that. There was two things that I wanted to do when I was a kid. I wanted to be a meteorologist. That was the number one thing. And then the other one was sort of weather related. And I grew up on the East Coast, so there was the Atlantic Ocean there. And the other thing I wanted to do would be a cruise ship captain, which is probably not one of the more typical occupations that somebody would want to do, but that was one of my ones. If meteorology didn't work out, that was your goal. I already had the weather behind it. So far, weather's worked out. I haven't been on a cruise ship, so...
That's good news, at least.
Yeah.
Is it more fun being a meteorologist in warmer weather or in cooler weather?
Well, we have the we're lucky to have both around here. We have the cold and the warm. They all have their problems. They all have their challenges. When it comes to snow, that's more disruptive than a warm season. Because of travel, people get school delays or cancellations. People delay or cancel their travel plans based on how much snow or ice there is. And a lot of times, the forecast for that kind of thing could be just a couple of degrees, either too warm or too cold, and it changed the forecast from either a cold rain to 6 inches of snow. So that is a challenge. The other challenge is similar kind of thing. It could be just a couple degrees. It may be a day where, hey, we've got a pretty good chance of severe weather, only if the temperature at, say, 5,000 feet in the air is 3 or 4 degrees cooler. If it stays warm, then we don't get any severe weather and it's just a hot, sunny day. So the big events sometimes could be just a couple degrees difference from either really good or really bad. So they both have their challenges.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe in the groundhog prediction of an early spring or 6 weeks longer winter?
It is a fun thing. It's more of a, I don't know. I mean, he's a rope. I mean, really, I don't know. They say it's road knees. I think it is the language that the rodent speaks to the handler. But, you know, I think it is. I think that's what they call it. I don't know. They make it up. I mean, the whole thing is made up. So why not? And if you really wanted to take the groundhog out and you've got all those cameras there, it's always going to be a shadow. Mm-hmm. But and every state has come up with a different of their own. In Arizona, they have a snake. In Wisconsin, they have a badger, I believe, that they have. So every state has something a little different. Yeah, and it's just a fun thing.
Okay.
And I'm a good taker for that area too.
My final question is, we're like looking at some snow for this weekend. What do you think this spring is going to look like for Iowa?
Well, so far it's been above normal, and they're changing from an El Nino to a La Nina, but El Nino is more of an impact on winter weather than it is spring weather. So I do think we will see probably more active weather than we have over the last couple of years, because the last 2 years we've seen some severe weather, but not very much compared to what we typically see. And we've already had missed out on 3 or 4 severe weather events just off to our south and east. So I'm leaning toward more active weather as we get through the spring and summer.
Okay, well, that was my last question. Thank you. You did great.
Good evening, Zach. Thank you for joining us on Hear Hoover Podcast.
How are you doing today?
Okay, so let's start off by asking, what's your profession?
Yeah, so I'm a storm chaser with Iowa Storm Chasing Network. I've been doing it for about a little over 10 years now, professionally, working with national and local TV stations.
So how did you really get interested in storm chasing?
I got interested in storm chasing back in 2007. I lived in a suburb just south of Des Moines called Norwalk. And in 2007, in the month of June, there was a twin tornado that developed west of town, moved to the southern portion of the town, and then developed another tornado on the north side of town and moved back through town again. So living through those tornadoes made me very interested in how storms develop, because we went from clear sunny skies to tornadoes in a matter of 30 minutes. So it really piqued my interest into why storms develop, and sort of in the movie Twister played a little factor into it as well. So seeing people storm chasing and experiencing those tornadoes firsthand, I was in the basement for those tornadoes, and I'm like, next time a tornado happens, I want to be out there and I want to see it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So was that probably one of the biggest storms you've seen or chased, or what's your biggest one you've ever chased?
Yeah, no. So in the last 10 years of chasing, I've seen several tornadoes now. I've seen some that looked like wedge tornadoes. However, they were not the strong tornadoes that are usually associated with those wedge type tornadoes. But I've seen several tornadoes over the last 10 years, and they range in all different sizes and strengths.
All right. So what's the farthest you ever traveled for a storm?
So back in the day, I used to like to go wherever a storm was available. So I would go all the way down to Oklahoma, and even down into Kansas. But now, as I've gotten older, I don't like sitting in cars for a very long time. I get bored easily. So I stay within the state boundaries now. Sometimes I'll venture out and move into the eastern portion of Nebraska, maybe northern Missouri. But for the most part, I stay here in Iowa just simply because I rather be back home within a couple hours instead of driving overnight and getting back home 12 hours later.
Yeah, so those storms really interest you, the ones that are closer now?
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing about storm chasing. A lot of people think that, you know, it's like the movie Twister or the tornado videos they see on YouTube. You know, everyone thinks that, oh, you know, we hop in our car, 20 minutes later, we're seeing this awe-inspiring tornado right in front of our eyes. But there's a lot of work that gets into it beforehand. You know, we're putting forecast hours ahead of it. We have to drive several hours to get to our target area that we forecast in. And then from there, we have to wait sometimes. We get there too early and we have to wait an hour or two or three for the storms to actually develop. And more times than not, even though a storm develops, we don't see anything. We just see a thunderstorm that produces maybe some strong winds, some larger hail. But on occasion, we'll eventually get a storm that produces a tornado. So that's the thing. A lot of people think all storms produce tornadoes that we chase, and that's not the case.
So how long do those preparations take sometimes? And what technology would you use in that?
So we're often looking at the weather models days ahead of the actual storm system. So, you know, we can see, you know, at least 2 weeks out with the weather models. But obviously, once you get past that 7-day period, it starts to become a little inaccurate. So you got to wait until about a few days out. But once you're in that 3 to 4 day range, you start to get a little bit more accuracy in the models. And at that point, we can start to tell where maybe the target area will be for storms. And obviously, as we get closer to that target day, that's when we can really refine that forecast and really pick a target area based on those higher resolution models. So obviously we're working days and ahead of time to really figure out where we need to go. And then the day of, you know, we get up early in the morning, we compare it to Christmas morning, we get excited that, you know, let's look over the latest data that we have available and then sort of create a new forecast. And from there, you know, that's where we have to determine, is the forecast still accurate? You know, that's the other thing. Sometimes we get up in the morning and overnight storms will ruin the atmosphere, and now all of a sudden the threat for today is no longer a thing. Or, you know, it could have amplified overnight, and all of a sudden, well, we have a bigger threat than we anticipated. So there's a lot that goes into it, and a lot of people don't understand that.
That makes sense. There's a lot of last second decisions, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Even when we're out there, you know, once we get to our target area, we're still refining our forecast, even still sitting in our target area. We, you know, sometimes we'll pick a target area and we might have to move 50 miles north or west just simply because of how things are progressing. It may not be moving through as quickly as anticipated. So now we have to move even more. So all of those last minute details play a big factor into it.
Yeah. So how do you stay safe during the storm chasing?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. A lot of people like to try to go out and storm chase on their own because they think that, oh, you know, I can see the thunderstorm, which is a true statement. But you have to really know how weather works. You have to know how to read the radar properly, sort of know how those atmospheric dynamics play into things, and sort of anticipate how fast those storms will be moving, because some storms will move rather slow. Some will be moving at interstate speeds. So those storms that are moving rather quickly at that 60 to 70 mile an hour range are rather dangerous because you can't stay out ahead of them no matter how fast you drive. So that's something to consider, as well as the storm orientation. Are the storms moving from southwest to northeast? Are they moving northwest to southeast? Or are they moving due west to due east? So, you know, considering those factors in the your overall plan. Now, how we stay safe, obviously knowing how the forecast works and the weather works, we position ourselves always on the southern flank of the storm system for the most part. And then we also make sure we have at least a good distance between us and the thunderstorm. Usually it's about a mile, sometimes more, depending on how we feel comfortable with things. But we're not one of those storm chasers that likes to get right up next to it. Some storm chasers will, because they feel comfortable doing that. But we like to make sure we're safe. And part of our safety precautions is we make sure we have enough distance between us and that thunderstorm.
Has there ever been a storm that you backed down because you thought it was going to be too big?
The only time that we, from a sense of backing down, there was a storm over Denison, Iowa, several years ago, that went tornado warned. It was producing a tornado according to radar through the town of Denison. We were several miles ahead of it, waiting for it to approach us. The reason we backed away from it, it was producing a crazy amount of lightning. It's still to this day one of the most horrific lightning storms I've ever witnessed as a storm chaser. So obviously lightning you can't see coming. All of a sudden it just comes from the sky. And unfortunately, it's one of the largest fatality weather-related deaths out there. So obviously from a safety standpoint, it was my initiative to take our team out of that position and get us even further away from the storm just with how crazy that lightning was.
Yeah, okay. So do you see yourself chasing storms for many more years?
Yeah, I think I'll keep chasing as long as, you know, I'm physically capable to. Obviously, I still love weather to this day. I may not be as aggressive as I used to once be, but I still love it. I get excited about it, whether it's, you know, winter storms or even severe weather. I've chased a hurricane. I'm not big into hurricanes, so I probably won't do that again. I've done one, and I can now say I've done it, and I'll probably never do it again. But as for severe weather, I'll continue to chase it as long as I'm possible.
So based off that, what's your favorite type of storm you like to chase?
Yeah, my favorite storm is obviously tornadoes, just simply because the weather is warm. Snow is fun from the standpoint of if you can hunker down and stay inside and hopefully you get the most amount of snow, that's the fun part. But back in the day, we used to drive and travel to those areas that were going to be impacted the hardest with the heaviest snowfall. But winter, it's cold, it's windy. It's not as fun as being out in the warm air underneath a thunderstorm. So I choose tornadoes any day.
Yeah, I figured it was going to be tornadoes. Well, I think that's it for today. Thanks for joining us on Hear Hoover Podcast.
Thank
you. Hi, I'm Kaylin, and I'm here with Mrs. Logeman. So can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Miss Logeman. I teach sixth grade language arts here at Hoover. I'm also the Hoover Safety Chair for our district.
So, since you're the Hoover Safety Chair, what would you do during a tornado?
Well, during a tornado drill, we make sure that all drills are announced. So, all of our teachers know that there's going to be a drill. We make an announcement over the intercom telling kids, you know, hey, this is a drill. We're going to practice it. And each classroom has certain areas that were declared safe for their kids to go line up, cover their necks and heads. Most of them are either in a hallway or like in a corner in the classroom away from windows.
So how do you keep everyone calm in like an actual emergency?
Yeah. And I know in elementary, it's probably a little bit trickier too, but at least with middle schoolers, thank goodness we haven't had any major weather emergencies. We've had a few, and just communicating really well with kids and making sure that they are aware of like the drills, the where we go, what we do, how to stay safe, can keep everybody pretty calm, that communication.
How do you encourage people to follow the same safety measures at home?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of people have like safety plans at home that they talk with their family about. If there's a fire, where do we meet? If we're separated, those are all great things for families to talk about, especially when you're talking about if kids are home alone, like make sure your kids know what's a safe location in your home or a condo or apartment, wherever to go. If there's a tornado, severe weather, a fire, where's your meeting spot, you know? Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how would you handle like an actual fire in the building?
In the building, if there is a fire, our fire alarms go off. There's different sensors that sense when a fire is happening. And we usually, as teachers, have communication with our team leaders and our principals to know what we're supposed to do. But anytime we hear the fire alarms go off, we need to treat it as if it's a real thing, no matter if we're like, maybe it's not, maybe it is. And we follow our fire safety and exit out the nearest doors. And sometimes those doors could be blocked with like the fire. And so we have to be aware of other exits that we can take as well.
What would be like the most important thing to do during like a natural disaster or an emergency in school?
I would say making sure that you know different locations to end up, and communication is super important. So whether it's the school communicating with parents or teachers communicating with students, or even students communicating with each other, like knowing where the safe place, the safe exit is, the safe location to be, knowing all of those locations and good communication.
What would be the most common thing to happen during a safety drill?
Most common thing? Mm-hmm. Like mishap or?
Yeah.
Mishap. Okay. During a drill, I would say if we have like a substitute teacher or a guest teacher, mishaps might be they go to the wrong location, or maybe they are unsure, but all of our substitutes are amazing. They get folders with instructions of where to go, what to do,
all of our teachers have their fire plans posted, their tornado locations posted. And a lot of times, as teachers, we work really well with guest teachers. And so we can talk and be like, hey, you actually go in the corner in your room for your safety. And so really mishaps, those do happen, but not really often. That's why we practice for our drills. So
what would you do if like a kid's having a panic attack in the classroom?
Yeah, another great question. That's a big thing for our students, and it's becoming more, as teachers, we're becoming more aware of students who have high anxiety levels and how to handle that. I would say in situations that I've experienced, like allowing that student to know that you're there, you're not going to leave them. If they need to go to a quiet place, sometimes we have like our paras walk with them. I've had students just take a walk around in our hall with an adult and just practice some good breathing techniques. If it's like an anxiety attack where it's kind of like paralyzing, they can't move, and it becomes like an issue with the class, as in like we can't protect like the student's dignity or like respect them in that way, then we might just have students kind of leave and go to a different classroom to work while we get that student to take some deep breaths and calm back down.
Okay, well, thank you. That's all the questions I have for you today.
Great.
Thank you. You were awesome.
Hi, I'm Nicole Walker. I teach sixth grade language arts here at Hoover Middle School.
And I'm Delani Harris, and I'm a student here at Hoover Middle School, and I'm a part of the Hoover podcast. And today we will be interviewing Mrs. Walker about her storm experience and what she went through. So, as I was told that you went through a storm experience, can you please tell me what that experience was like?
Yeah. So in August of 2020, there was a storm called a derecho that went through much of the state of Iowa. And it went through Tama County, and I was living and teaching in South Tama at the time. It was August of 2020, like I said, so it was kind of our first, we were getting ready to head back to school after COVID had shut us down. And that day I had actually gone into school that morning and got in my classroom like all set up. And then we heard that there was a storm coming, and then it was a thunderstorm, but we didn't know what was going to happen. So I got home, and right after I got home, the storm hit and my power went out. And my daughter was at her babysitter's house. And so for the first little bit, I just was in the basement, and I heard all sorts of thunder and lightning, and the rain was coming in, and I could hear it banging on the back door. And it was just, it was crazy. And it went through so fast. And then I came upstairs and saw what happened after the storm was done. And on my street, there were two big trees that were down, one on each side of my house. And so then I had to walk to where I could meet my daughter because there was no way that cars could get through.
So were you just mostly like after the storm, like just isolated in your house?
We got lucky that the trees on my street got cleared pretty quickly. But I didn't have power for 10 days. So I ended up having to leave town and stay with family because I had no power at all. And like a lot of people in town didn't have power for up to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a pretty scary experience.
Yes. So. And actually, the middle school that I taught at, that I had just been at, the roof got ripped off of the middle school. So then we had to push back the start of school, and we had to like completely rearrange where grades 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th were going to school because we couldn't use the building.
Mm-hmm. Sounds unimaginable.
Yes, it was really crazy to live through, on top of it just having been everything shut down for COVID, and we were just finally getting ready to start back in that August, and then all of a sudden we had to redo another plan. So it was a lot, and it was weird to think and look around and see all of the damage and go, how could this not have been a tornado? But I learned the difference between a tornado and a derecho. So that was an interesting thing to learn about, because I had never heard of it before then. So basically it's like straight line winds, whereas tornadoes spin around. And they said that some of the winds were as fast as like a Category 3 hurricane is what they said. So it was kind of like a hurricane inland. So it was really crazy to be a part of. And the storm ripped like my power box off of my house. And so, and then there was just power lines down everywhere, trees everywhere. Houses were literally like knocked off their foundations. So, but everybody kind of pitched in afterwards and made sure everybody had what they needed. And that was a good thing to see during the storm or after the storm.
So like around your house, was, except for like the trees being knocked down, was there like any more damage besides the power?
Yeah. So one of the big pole with the transformer box for all of the houses in our neighborhoods was literally broken in half. My daughter had like a wooden playhouse set that was completely knocked over and destroyed. People's cars got hit with flying branches. It was crazy. So there was a lot of water, a lot of damage. And, you know, even when you were leaving town, you could just see, like, you know, how when you're driving down the road out in the country, there's like just lines and lines of power poles. Well, those were all knocked over. They were all on the ground, just laying there. And it made you think about how power travels all across everywhere to get there to power what we need on our daily basis, you know. How we live without Wi-Fi or, you know, power, you know, all of the things that run based on power, your heat, or actually in, since it was August, your air conditioning. We didn't have air conditioning in the house that night. You know, I had to try to figure out how to feed us, you know, the refrigerator, the freezer, all of the things that end up not working because you don't have any power.
So I think that's it for our podcast.
All right.
So thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
My name is Anthony Boggs. I'm the 7th grade literacy teacher at Uber Middle School.
What is your profession other than being at work?
I've been a teacher for 20 years.
I've heard you've been in the storm. How did it feel, what it felt like?
It was not fun, I can tell you that. My wife and I were at home, and there had been a tornado warning out, so we were paying attention. The tornado sirens went off, so we gathered our cat, and we went down to the basement, and we waited for the all clear. And the all clear came, and nothing had happened, so we went back upstairs, looked outside, started watching television again just to track the map, and about 15 minutes later, the house started to shake. I looked at my wife and I said, go! And we took off for the basement. We did not make it there. The roof collapsed right in between the two of us. I was able to dive for cover underneath a washer and dryer. My wife was in a doorway. So everywhere between us and our kitchen collapsed in. We found our cat later on out on the porch.
She's like, I know this was happening.
She was the calmest amongst all of us.
Yeah, she was like, I know this.
The trees and power lines had come down outside. So we had to basically hack our way out with garden tools. And we finally made it back to the highway. And that's where the rescue crews were, herding people out of my particular neighborhood. By the time it was all said and done, the tornado ate about a quarter of my house.
Oh, God. gosh. And when did that happen?
That was March the 6th, 2017.
Oh my gosh, you still remember the date.
What have you learned by participating in the podcast?
I've learned that it takes teamwork, and it's definitely hard for someone that's shy. What about you?
What I've learned that is sometimes you need to work together if you want to finish a project, and sometimes you can't just do it all by yourself.
It's kind spring of- is when you feel like whistling, even when a shoe full of slush. Doug Larson, journalist from the Green Bay Press Gazette. Thank you for listening to
Here's a Word!